for listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Molly Birnbaum was hit by a car while she was jogging near her home in Brookline, Massachusetts, just months before she was scheduled to start training to be a chef at the Culinary Institute of America. The accident left her with a fractured skull, a broken pelvis, a badly damaged knee, and, most important for a future chef, without the ability to smell. Ms. Birnbaum was on our show in June to discuss her memoir, Seasoned to Taste, How I Lost My Sense of Smell and Found My Way, in which she describes her efforts to regain her lost sense and to return to the kitchen, and we thought we would re-air that conversation for you today. I began by asking Molly Birnbaum, when someone loses her sense of smell, doesn't she also lose her sense of taste?
Well, smell and taste are very intertwined. And so our sense of taste, which is the salty, sweet, bitter, and sour of our taste buds, still remains intact when you lose your sense of smell. But all of the nuance and the detail that comes with smell, the herbs and the spices, really the flavor is gone.
So what we it's kind of like a cardboardy thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, eating a bite of steak without a sense of smell tasted to me like warm cardboard with a little bit of salt on top.
What about chocolate?
Chocolate, a little bit chalky. You could feel it melt, and there was the sugar of the sweet, but nothing more.
You mentioned something actually that we did on this show in the book, where we had Ruth Reichel, Danya Ballou, and a scientist from the Manil Institute in Philadelphia that involved nose clips. We put nose clips on, and we couldn't taste even the strongest flavors until we removed the clips.
Right. I mean, one of the best ways to demonstrate the power of smell when it comes to taste is to hold your nose and put a jelly bean in your mouth, actually, without looking at the color so you can't tell the flavor, and chew. I guarantee you cannot tell what flavor it is until you release your nose and you start breathing through your nose at the same time so you can smell.
And suddenly you realize that this is a very powerful taste in
your
mouth. How long did it take after the accident before you realized that you had, anosmia?
Anosmia, yes.
The technical term for not being able to smell anything?
It was a number of weeks after the accident when I realized that I couldn't smell, and that was in part because I was injured in all sorts of other places, but also because an absence of smell certainly doesn't hit you over the head. It just wasn't there. And I realized a few weeks later when my stepmother actually baked an apple crisp, and I was in a room with a lot of family and friends, and they were oohing and aahing over this delicious smell, and I couldn't get anything. And even when she held it underneath my nose and I breathed in, there was nothing. I realized that something was wrong.
Are some people born with anosmia?
For sure. The congenital anosmics are born without a sense of smell.
You've written movingly about how devastating that loss was for you, and it was upsetting not only because it threw a huge obstacle into your career path, but hasn't the inability to smell been linked to depression?
It has. I mean, beyond the simple link between taste and flavor with smell, it's been found that those who have lost their sense of smell fall into depression of some level. There have also been studies to find that people who are depressed smell less. So it
as a consequence of the depression?
It's not clear exactly why, but there is a link there. And in my experience, I totally believe it.
And as Marcel Proust has shown us, smell can be closely linked to memory. Was it difficult for you to conjure up some memories while you were unable to smell?
Right. Well, I mean, we all know the experience of coming across a smell, a surprising smell maybe, but a familiar one that brings back these very potent memories, ones filled with emotion, you know, mainly from our childhood. And without a sense of smell, I, of course, didn't have that. And I wondered, you know, where did those memories go and what did it mean that I could no longer, you know, feel those intense memories from my childhood anymore.
Well, most of us aren't even aware of our sense of smell until something really powerful enters our mm-hmm. nasal passages. But were you strongly aware of this loss?
I was very strongly aware of this loss, and mainly because I was an aspiring chef at the time that I lost my sense of smell. So I had been spending my nights working in a restaurant, you know, just awash with smells of chicken stock and, you know, roasting duck and all sorts of very potent culinary smells. So without it, I really felt like I lost this link to my passion.
And you worried that you wouldn't be able to that it could affect your safety because you wouldn't be able to smell whether the milk you were drinking had spoiled or if your house was on fire.
Exactly. I was very nervous. I felt vulnerable without a sense of smell, simply in day-to-day tasks. You know, was I burning something in the kitchen? Was my food rotten? Were my clothes clean? All sorts of things that I had never thought about before.
And you were concerned that it would have an impact on your sex life?
Well, there are many links between smell and sexual attraction and libido. I mean, pheromones are something that are talked about all the time and are controversial, but it's pretty clear that smell and sex do have a link. So when I couldn't smell, I was very worried that I wouldn't be attracted to men or the right man and what it would mean who I chose to be with in the end.
You might not know if somebody never washed.
Exactly.
Some of my listeners will know you as the author of a popular food blog, My Madeline. Madeline, is that how we'd say it?
Madeline.
Hadn't you started the blog before the accident?
I started writing on that blog before the accident when I was working at the very bottom rung of a great restaurant in Boston on my way towards culinary school. I wanted to learn from the bottom up, so I took a job as a dishwasher at a fabulous restaurant in Cambridge, Craigie Street Bistro, and I started writing about it then.
And it's a bistro spelled with a T at the end. I've always wondered why some bistros are spelled B-I-S-T-R-O and others with the T at the end.
This one has a T. I'm not sure why, though.
You were just about to graduate from Brown with a degree in art history when you applied for that job. Had you lost interest in art?
I've always loved art, but in my final years of college, I fell deeply in love with food and cooking, and I knew that that was something that I wanted to pursue.
And you went to work as a dishwasher? Is that really the way? Is that like starting in the mailroom and working your way up to president?
It is. It is very much like that. I mean, I think one of the best ways to become a chef is to really learn the ingredients on a very intimate level. And that doesn't mean starting by plating, you know, beautiful pieces of art on a plate and eating it. I think it starts with chopping garlic.
Weren't chopping garlic, which might have been easier for you. You're rather petite. Washing dishes is pretty heavy work, isn't it?
It was intense, and my body definitely hurt, at least in the beginning when I was getting used to it. But it was a great workout, and I got to eat a whole lot more while I was doing it, so I loved that.
So you were learning about the food not so much by cooking it, but by watching what was going on around you and eating it?
Right. I did a lot of watching, and I also did a lot of prep of ingredients on a very base level, chopping garlic, washing mushrooms, you know, handling the produce, plucking herbs. So learning all of these things from their texture and their feel and their smell, and learning and watching how other people put them together.
In the past, people learned how to cook on a restaurant level by becoming apprentices and starting at the bottom. In the old days, it could take 7 or 8 years. Now I think people are a little impatient. Is that why so many now go to school?
I think that's one of the reasons why. I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go to culinary school. I was impatient to move forward quickly. But I do think there is a lot to be said for starting at the bottom as I did, though I did not get very far.
I've known some people who went through culinary school to be snobbish about self-taught chefs, even when those self-taught chefs were pretty good.
I think there are strong opinions on both sides of that track, for sure.
My guest is Molly Birnbaum, who's written a book called Season to Taste, How I Lost My Sense of Smell and Found My Way. It's published by Echo. So, as I said earlier, you had been accepted by the CIA, which is one of the most famous culinary schools in the country, in Hyde Park. And you've said that one of the most difficult phone calls you've ever had to make was to tell the school that you wouldn't be arriving in December to start your program.
It's true.
So what did you think was going to happen, that you'd come some later date?
Well, I had hope. When I lost my sense of smell, I went to see a number of doctors and specialists, and the majority of them told me that I would never get my sense of smell back, or if I did, it was a very small possibility, and there wasn't a whole lot of hope, so I didn't really know what to expect.
Now, why wouldn't you be able to get it back? Is there a nerve that's damaged that doesn't recover?
Well, what I was told after the car accident in which I lost my sense of smell is that when I fractured my skull, my brain bounced within my skull on that impact and, in effect, severed the olfactory neurons, which run from the nose to the brain. And so they were sheared off like a lawnmower over grass. And without those connections, I could no longer perceive smell. And these neurons are actually some of the few in the human body that are capable of regeneration and regrowth. So it always was a possibility that they would regrow and reattach and I could recover. But there are lots of things that come in the way of that, especially with a head injury, which is one of the many ways you can lose your sense of smell. So I think it's something lower than 20% of people with my type of injury actually do recover.
And you are one of that.
I was very 20%. Lucky, yeah.
So once you recovered your sense of smell, did you decide to go back to the CIA and say, I'm ready now?
I did not, actually. I mean, gaining back my sense of smell took years. It's been 6 years now, and I feel like I'm just now at the point in which I can say I smell everything around me again. And along the way, I mean, of course, my life has changed. I've learned to cook at home. I've learned to write. I've found many passions on the side of cooking. So CAA, probably not in the near future anyway.
And after your sense of smell returns, you wrote about it on your blog. And, well, first you wrote about it on your blog after the accident, and many of your followers wrote to tell you that they'd lost their sense of smell after head injuries and that they never recovered it.
There are so many people out there with a lost or damaged sense of smell, which is something that I had no idea about before I started the research for this book. And I've met a number of them through my blog and through my research. But it's a far more common disability than most people understand.
And then you discovered after your accident that from 1% and 2% of the American population, as many as 3 million people have lost their ability to smell. That's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people.
So what do they do? Obviously, they don't work in the food industry.
Well, most do not, for sure. It's a disability that is possible to live with. I mean, very clearly, it's an invisible loss. It doesn't hit you over the head with its effects on a day-to-day basis. It's simply an absence, and one that does carry weight, depression, losing memories or ability to eat like you could, but it is not as severe as most people would consider the loss of sight or hearing. So it does have effects, but it's not impossible to live with.
Unless you want to be a chef.
Unless you want to be a chef.
You learned fairly soon about what happened to Grant Achatz, the chef at the famous Chicago restaurant Alinea, who developed cancer of the tongue and lost his sense of taste for a while.
Yeah.
And they told him he would never regain it either.
He was lucky as well. I went and I spent some time with Chef Achatz when I was reporting this book and had the chance to eat at his restaurant. And I know it was wonderful, and I got to see how he learned to appreciate flavor and how it relates to the other senses, which is something that struck me as well when I couldn't smell. When you lose a sense, you really learn to concentrate on the other ones and how they come together.
Well, he had cancer of the tongue, and radiation, a radical radiation treatment, saved him. Does traditional or even non-traditional medicine offer any treatment for people who've lost their ability to smell?
There are no clear cures for most people who lose their ability to smell. It depends. Some people with sinus problems can have surgery or take steroids, and that can help. But for someone like me with a head injury or simply having a cold, a virus can damage the olfactory neurons. There really aren't many clear solutions. And so one of the only things you can do is wait and see. I also did a lot of practice. I smelled a lot of things even when I couldn't smell. And it's been shown through scientific studies that that does help if you can't smell or if you can only smell a little bit. But other than that, there's not a whole lot.
Could it revive sense memory, the thing that actors talk about?
Sense memory?
Yeah, if you already have the memory of a smell and then you're smelling it, even if you're not smelling it particularly strongly.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think even just a tiny, tiny hint of the smell for me when I was beginning to recover brought out, you know, so much more.
One of the people you write about in this book is Richard Doty, who's a scientist who founded the Taste and Smell Center at the University of Pennsylvania 20 years ago. Didn't he allow you to sit in while he tested people who'd lost their sense of smell?
He did. We asked the patients first, of course. But I did get to meet through that experience a lot of people who had lost or had disruptions with their sense of smell, which really put my own experience in a larger context.
And his secretary made it very clear to people who called that the center offered testing only, not treatment.
Right.
What kind of tests did they do?
Well, they would test your ability to smell and your ability to taste and to make sure all aspects of that system were working or were not working to give you a clearer picture of what exactly was going on so you could understand it more fully.
And then people told Dr. Doty that even though he hadn't given them any hope for recovery, they were glad that they'd been tested. Why?
Well, I think that there's so much mystery surrounding the sense of smell, and especially the illnesses involving smell, that simply having a better understanding of what is going on in your own body, even if it doesn't have a clear solution, is helpful.
So let's talk about your recovery. What was the first thing that you were able to smell after the accident?
It was rosemary. It was fabulous.
Have you ever wondered why rosemary of all things?
I do wonder. A lot of the first smells to return to me were ones that I loved and, you know, had memories attached to, which was one of the first fabulous mysteries I found in terms of researching the sense of smell. Still don't have answers, but I was chopping the fresh herb for dinner with my mother, and it just hit me over the head, and I could smell it.
And did that free up everything, or did it still take time for you to regain the smell of other things?
It took many years for me to regain all of my sense of smell. And in the beginning especially, it happened one scent at a time, very slowly.
And remembering what we said earlier about depression, as you recovered, you say you noticed that your sense of smell dimmed when you were sad and that it was elevated when you were happy.
Yeah, and that was something.
Do you think that happens with everybody?
I don't know. I've asked the question, and not a whole lot of people have thought about it that much. But it's something I really noticed, especially as I was researching.
Because I've always thought of it in the other way. When I'm in a garden where there are a lot of flowers with strong, wonderful scents, I feel happier.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure whether it's because I'm happier that I'm smelling them or that I'm smelling them makes me happier.
It's hard to say. There are so many links between mood and emotion and smell. But I definitely found that when I was happy or even when I was anxious, when my mood was elevated in some way, I could smell more and more intensely. Whereas when I was depressed, smells were very dim.
You also talked to other scientists. Oliver Sacks.
I did.
You wrote he was especially interested when you told him that you felt you'd been able to smell your brain at one point in your recovery. Really?
Yeah.
What does your brain smell like?
Well, to me, I thought it smelled very earthy, kind of like a garden without the flowers. Of course, it turned out not to be my brain that I was actually smelling.
What were you smelling?
But it's very common for people who lose their sense of smell and begin to regain it to have something called phantom smells, which are smells that are being manufactured by our own brain, not of our brain, but simply smells that don't actually exist in concrete reality around us.
I've read that women have more refined senses of smell and taste, and that's why they're hired often by perfume makers, as coffee tasters, as people who taste wines and alcoholic beverages.
Well, we all smell differently. There are so many different reasons. One is gender. It's been shown that women have a more acute sense of smell. Another is age. We definitely lose our ability to smell as we get older. And another one is genetics. We're genetically predisposed to smell different things differently.
You spoke about smell with Christophe Laudamiel, the French perfumer.
Mm-hmm.
I got the impression he was very sorry for your loss. Didn't he even offer to help you train your sense smell and give you vials containing different scents to practice with?
Did that work? He was one of the first people to tell me that practice could improve my sense of smell. And I had never, ever sat down and just smelled things before when I met him. But he explained to me that perfumers learn to make perfume by smelling and by learning their ingredients, you know, on a very intimate level. And so after I met him, I began to practice smelling. And at first, it didn't help. I was very frustrated. But as time went on and I smelled more and more and more, I did find that it did help me, for sure.
When did you feel comfortable going back to cooking?
It happened gradually. I've been cooking since I lost my sense of smell to very mixed results, especially in the beginning. But it was really when I could smell most things again and I practiced that I felt confident in terms of cooking savory things that I had to taste as I went along.
Because baking is a lot easier. You measure. Mm-hmm. It's really more scientific. The only thing you miss is that wonderful smell.
I know.
When you open the oven.
I started with baking because I felt much more comfortable following those recipes and using science and measurements.
Were you grateful that there were some things you couldn't smell? After all, for a while you were living in New York City, and especially during a garbage strike, uh-huh, things can get pretty rough.
Well, I'll never forget the first bad smell that I smelled, which was in New York City. And I was leaving my office one day, and I think it was in the summer, and there was, you know, a bag of trash by the trash can waiting to get picked up. And you know, the sun had been beating down on it, and it had that typical New York smell. And though today, sometimes I miss the days in which I couldn't smell anything bad, that first bad smell was glorious.
Molly Birnbaum's work has appeared in the New York Times and Art News. She writes a popular food blog, My Madeleine, and now she has written this memoir called Season to Taste, How I Lost My Sense of Smell and Found My Way. It's published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.